Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Wednesday, March 5th, the UN's World Food Agency warns its Gaza food stocks will only last 2 weeks amid an Israeli aid blockade. The Holy See once again reaffirms its commitment to a nuclear weapons-free world at the third meeting of states' parties. But first, a brief update on the Pope's health as he continues to receive treatment in Rome's Gemelli Hospital. In the Vatican, I'm Kelsey Gussie. According to a statement published on Wednesday morning by the Holy See Press Office, Pope Francis rested well last night and woke up slightly after 8 a.m. This morning, he continued his treatment and respiratory physiotherapy. As planned, the Pope transitioned from a non-invasive mechanical ventilation at night to the high-flow oxygen therapy through nasal cannulas. Though within a complex calm frame, the Pope's overall clinical situation this morning seemed stable. The Global Terrorism Index says the Sahel region of Africa has emerged as the new epicenter of global terrorism, now responsible for over half of all terrorism-related deaths. Nathan Morley reports.
In this semi-arid area, south of the Sahara Desert, 3,885 people out of a global total of 7,555 died from terrorism-related incidents. While the global number has decreased from a high of 11,000 in 2015, the Sahel's figures have surged nearly tenfold since 2019, as extremist and insurgent groups focus on the region. Published by the Institute for Economics and Peace, the GTI defines terrorism as the use of illegal force and violence by non-state actors to achieve political, economic, religious, or social goals through fear or coercion. The Sahel encompasses parts of 10 countries, including Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Cameroon, Guinea, the Gambia, Senegal, Nigeria, Chad, and Mauritania. With high birth rates and a young population, the Sahel faces a unique challenge. The report notes that whilst lone actor terrorism is rising in the West, the Sahel has seen a rapid expansion of militant jihadist groups. The majority of attacks are carried out by the so-called Islamic State group affiliate in the Sahel and the Jama al-Nusrat al-Islam wal-Muslim, or JNIM, a branch of Al-Qaeda. Since 2020, the Sahel has seen 6 successful coups, earning it the nickname of Coup Belt of Africa. Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea and Niger are now under military junta rule, exacerbating the region's challenges. The GTI report underscores the urgent need for effective governance and stability to curb the rise of extremism and insurgency. Insurgent groups are competing for control of the Sahel's abundant natural resources as well. Niger is the world's 7th largest uranium producer, and numerous unregulated artisanal gold mines in the region, they're frequently exploited by terrorists. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
The United Nations World Food Agency is warning that its Gaza food stocks will last only 2 weeks amid an Israeli aid blockade. The alarm comes as food prices in the Gaza Strip have spiked and the community kitchens are running low after the Israeli Prime Minister chose to stop aid during the weekend, accusing Hamas of stealing supplies and refusing a U.S. proposal to extend the Israel-Hamas ceasefire. Linda Bordoni reports.
Israel's cut off of food, fuel, medicine and other supplies to Gaza's 2 million people has sent prices soaring and humanitarian groups into overdrive, trying to distribute dwindling stocks to the most vulnerable. The aid freeze has imperiled the progress aid workers say they have made to stave off famine over the past 6 weeks during phase one of the ceasefire deal Israel and Hamas agreed to in January. After more than 16 months of war, Gaza's population is entirely dependent on trucked-in food and other aid. Most are displaced from their homes and many need shelter. Fuel is needed not only for the trucks delivering the aid, but to keep hospitals, water pumps, bakeries and telecommunications operating. Israel has delayed moving to the second phase of the deal it reached with Hamas, during which the flow of aid was supposed to continue, saying the siege aims at pressuring Hamas to accept its new ceasefire proposal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Tuesday that he's prepared to increase the pressure and would not rule out cutting off all electricity to Gaza if Hamas doesn't comply. Rights groups have called the cut-off a starvation policy. 4 days in, the World Food Programme said existing stocks are enough to keep bakeries and kitchens running for under 2 weeks. And according to the Norwegian Refugee Council, there's also no major stockpile of tents in Gaza. It pointed out that shelter materials that came in during the ceasefire's first phase were already insufficient. Had they been enough, the organization's communications chief said, we wouldn't have had infants dying from exposure because of lack of shelter materials and warm clothes and proper medical equipment to treat them. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Dozens of people in the Sudanese state of North Darfur are feared dead following heavy shelling on a camp for displaced people. The paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, attacked a crowded market at Abu Shouk, a camp on the outskirts of the city of El Fasher. For roughly 2 hours on Tuesday evening, a local official reported. The camp is home to over 500,000 displaced people, and the assault on its market is the second in 3 days. El Fasher is the last major town in Darfur under army control and has been under siege by the RSF for almost a year. As the world marks the 80th anniversary of the first nuclear test in New Mexico and the devastating bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Holy See has once again reaffirmed its commitment to a world free of nuclear weapons. Addressing the third meeting of states parties to the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, Archbishop Gabriele Caccia, representing the Holy See delegation, urged the international community to embrace peace over deterrence, reminding participants of the immeasurable suffering caused by nuclear weapons. Francesca Merlo tells us more.
In his address on Tuesday, Archbishop Caccia recalled the lasting humanitarian, psychological, cultural and environmental consequences of nuclear warfare which continue to impact generations. He honoured the victims, particularly the Hibakusha, or survivors of the atomic bombs, who bear witness to the catastrophic effects of nuclear weapons. It is a collective responsibility of the international community to ensure that the atrocities of the past are not repeated, the Archbishop said, urging global efforts to protect future generations from nuclear devastation. He expressed concern over the growing geopolitical tensions and the dangerous reliance on deterrence-based rhetoric, warning of potential catastrophic outcomes. This mistrust is undermining disarmament efforts while military expenditures are rising, he lamented, pointing to the diversion of resources from addressing critical global issues such as poverty, hunger and climate change. Quoting then Pope Francis, the Archbishop underscored the moral imperative to reject war. The time has come to say an emphatic no to war. Wars are not just, but only peace is just. A stable and lasting peace built on fraternity. He called for peace rooted not in the balance of deterrence, but in mutual respect and solidarity. The Holy See also acknowledged the vital role of scientific research in understanding the long-term effects of nuclear warfare, and Archbishop Caccia praised the scientific advisory group and the adoption of a resolution to promote further research into the humanitarian and ecological consequences of nuclear weapons. Concluding, the Archbishop invoked Pope Francis's call for a future free of nuclear weapons, urging the international community to learn from the past and work towards a peaceful, just and fraternal future. I'm Francesca Merlo.
For 61 years, the National Conference of Bishops of Brazil has promoted an initiative called the Campaign for Fraternity, which takes place every year during Lent and focuses on a specific topic. This year's theme is Fraternity and Integral Ecology. The theme, chosen in 2023, promotes a process of integral conversion, listening to the cry of the poor and the cry of the earth. Thaddeus Jones tells us more about what the Pope had to say in a letter addressed to the Brazilian Catholic community about this initiative in this report.
In the message released on Ash Wednesday, the start of the Lenten season, Pope Francis expresses his closeness to the Brazilian Catholic community and praises the bishops for launching this edition of the Campaign for Fraternity. He highlights the bishop's invitation for everyone to walk during Lent a path of conversion based on the encyclical Laudato Si, published 10 years ago, and its counterpart, the apostolic exhortation, Laudate Deum. The Pope explains these documents were meant to emphasize how the current ecological crisis is a call to a profound inner conversion. And recalling the words of Saint Pope John Paul II, he stresses that it was necessary to stimulate and support the ecological conversion, which made humanity more sensitive to the mission of caring for the earth. In Brazil, a country home to the most biologically diverse populations of native plants and animal species on earth, protection of the environment is very important. This fall, the country will host the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP30, in Belém do Pará, at the heart of the Amazon. In light of this, Pope Francis points out that the theme of the 2025 campaign for fraternity reiterates the Church's readiness to foster global cooperation to help overcome the climate crisis and preserve the marvelous work of creation. The Pope's message expresses his desire that the campaign will once again be a powerful aid to the people and communities of this beloved country in their concrete commitment to integral ecology. In conclusion, the Pope entrusts his prayers to the care of Our Lady of Aparecida, and he wholeheartedly imparts his apostolic blessing to all the sons and daughters of the beloved Brazilian nation, especially to those who are engaged in caring for our common home. He also asks that they continue to pray for him. I'm Thaddeus Jones.
Although today's general audience was canceled as the Holy Father continues his treatment for bilateral pneumonia in Rome's Gemelli Hospital, Pope Francis chose to have the Holy See Press Office publish his address, as he has done throughout his hospitalization. Continuing his catechesis on Jesus Christ, our hope, the Pope continued speaking on Jesus' childhood, focusing in particular on the finding of Jesus in the temple at the age of 12. And as Deborah Castellano-Luboff reports, Pope Francis used this story to encourage the faithful to consider their own search for the Lord.
Like Mary and Joseph, full of hope, let us also set out in that search of the Lord who cannot be contained within our limited expectations. This was the central theme of Pope Francis's prepared text for the general audience originally scheduled today. Holy Father marveled that this account of Mary and Joseph searching for Jesus in the temple presents us with a very interesting dialogue between Mary and Jesus. The Pope recalled the various stages of the Blessed Mother's journey throughout the Lord's life, noting how she remained a pilgrim of hope, was his first disciple. He added that she nurtured him, helped him grow, and followed him, allowing herself to be shaped by the Word of God before anyone else. That experience of losing sight of Jesus at the age of 12 during that annual pilgrimage to Jerusalem frightened Mary so much that the Pope suggested Mary and Joseph experience the pain of parents who lose a child. Anxiety set in, and they began a desperate search, retracing their steps. Returning to the temple, they discovered that the one whom they had until recently seen as a child in need of protection had suddenly matured. They noticed, the Pope said, he had become capable of engaging in discussions on the scriptures, holding his own in debates with the teachers of the law. In response to his mother's reproach, Jesus replied simply, saying he was conducting his father's business. However, the Pope observed, Mary and Jesus did not understand. The mystery of God made child surpassed their comprehension. His parents, the Pope recognized, wanted to protect their precious son under the wings of their love. But Jesus, he continued, instead wanted to live out his vocation as the Son of the Father, serving him and immersing himself in his word. Finally, and with this in mind, the Pope urged the faithful to seek the Lord like Mary and Joseph did, and to do so full of hope. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. Many thanks go to Daniele Giorgi in studio, and thanks to you all for listening. In the Vatican, I'm Kelsey Gussie, wishing you a blessed Ash Wednesday.